broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is indeed the broadcast for November the 2nd in the year of our Lord, 2018. This is our two of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. And yes, my fellow Americans, it is Thanksgiving, and we're live for both hours. We want to spend time with you this Thanksgiving as you get ready for loved ones and family and friends and et cetera. Spread the word. How grateful we are for this free country that we live in. And you know what? There's a lot that you could run around and be negative about, folks. But there's a lot to be positive about, too. And we choose to highlight the positive this day. There's a couple of negative things that we want to talk about a little bit. We'll do that in minutes. First off, random Kelly Paul had a Thanksgiving message for us.
Hey, Kentucky. Happy Thanksgiving. I know Kelly and I and our family love this time of year. We usually have an annual football game outside. We like to have bonfires and get everybody together. It's a nice time for the kids to come home. And I think most families are like that. Watch some football, have a good time. And we're thankful, not only for our family, but for our health. And we're really thankful that our country's doing so well, and we hope that'll continue.
We're mindful of our soldiers overseas who aren't able to be with their families this year. We're keeping them in our hearts and in our prayers. And we just want to wish all of you a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Amen. We're also mindful of the prisoners by the thousands, by the millions, whatever you want to say, that are suffering as well. We're mindful of those folks, and we're grateful that people are trying to work on prison reform and do something about it. You know, a lot of people are even critical of the prison reform. I've read some articles where people are really critical of that, and I get their frustrations. And I get the concerns, but we've got to do something, right? We've got to do something about it. All right, President Trump is in the news. Kurt, did you get that incredible write-up from the president on his Thanksgiving proclamation?
Yes.
I mean, this is, in my opinion, really good.
Well, it just shows you how way out he is and how, you know, off the wall and how
Wait a minute, it's totally spot on.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Everything about it is fantastic, if you ask me.
Oh, okay, yeah. He's not bombastic or crazy here, you know. He's just kind of like a real
American
quality guy. Yeah. Whoa. Anyway, the headline reads, President Trump's Thanksgiving message to Americans. It's that time of year again, as many Americans travel far and wide to be with loved ones over the Thanksgiving holiday, gathering in places of worship and around family dinner tables. It's a time to give appreciation for all that we've been blessed with. On Thanksgiving Day, we recall the courageous and inspiring journey of the pilgrims who nearly four centuries ago ventured across the vast ocean to flee religious persecution and established a home in the New World. President Donald J. Trump wrote in his 2018 Thanksgiving proclamation, facing dangerous conditions and uncertainty, the more than 100 pilgrims arrived at Plymouth, Massachusetts, and instilled in our nation a strong faith in God that continues to be a beacon of hope to all Americans. In recognition of their journey, President George Washington issued the first Thanksgiving proclamation on November 26, 1789. But it was under President Abraham Lincoln that the day became a true national celebration on the final Thursday of November each year. Final parts of it says, we give thanks for the family, friends, neighbors, and loved ones who enrich our lives, lift our spirits, and fill our days with joy. And we give thanks to God, who continues to shed his almighty grace upon this magnificent land that we all love so very much. President Trump said that yesterday from the Rose Garden. We are truly blessed to be Americans. Cool. Good stuff.
Do you see a single concern with what he's written, Kurt?
No.
I don't see a single problem with it. He highlights the history of America in a meaningful way. He talks about bringing people together. He talks about how grateful we are. He mentions God, the author of our liberty. Doesn't he talk a little bit about the pilgrims too, Kurt?
Yes, he does.
And the Thanksgiving
and the
they had together.
They were leaving religious persecution. And of course, you know, there's none of that going on in the world today, Sam.
Wow, President Trump. I think this is important to understand because the liberals, if they're going to be honest with themselves, ladies and gentlemen, would have to acknowledge this. President Trump, presidential proclamation on Thanksgiving Day 2018. To me, tremendous. Very, very good. It's short, but it's powerful, Kurt. It mentions God and blessings and gratitude and I mean, a bunch of times, right? And you contrast,
yes, it does.
You contrast that with some of the previous presidents. I'm not here to start an argument, but I'm here just to say, I really think that whether Donald's perfect or not, whether he's a moral guy or not, whether he's moved the needle on liberty as much as he should, or whether he's kept as many promises as he'd hoped to, or whatever you want to say, this acknowledgement of God by the President of the United States of America is good and valuable. And even if a not so great vessel, in other words, even if a sinner approaches God and has meaningful acknowledgement of him or appreciation for him or gratitude, the Lord's going to acknowledge it, Kurt. It's going to do nothing but good for America to acknowledge God as the leader of the free world. That's the stuff I'm talking about that makes America great and brings people together. At least it should. Anyway, it's really good news in my opinion. I wish we had it. I wish, you know, like they got the Saturday Weekly Address where President Trump speaks it. I wish we had it in his own words. The problem is I just don't have time to hunt for everything all the time and get it and, you know, make it. But I'd love to have that in President Trump's words where we could, you know, play that thing. Just think how focused that is. They say that Donald Trump is just crazy. You know, he's kind of holed up in the White House, kind of nutty and. And you read that, Kurt, and you go, you know what? I don't know that there's been a presidential address that good in my whole life that relates to Thanksgiving. Can you think of one?
Nope.
I'm just telling you. So I wrote it down. Donald Trump, presidential proclamation on Thanksgiving Day 2018. But I guess it was released a little bit before, huh? So it's,
yeah,
you know, it's meant to be for that day, but it was what do you want to say, pre-written or whatever, so that it could be sent out and distributed, right?
Yep, good point.
But I'm just telling you, that's phenomenal, though. I just don't see a negative in it, and I don't want to hear a negative about it. I think, what if you were to share this with your friends that are not, that don't like Trump, or, you know, guys like me are skeptical of Trump and concerned, and when he does good I promote him, when he does bad I let you know where I think it's wrong. I'm kind of in the middle. Many are much more pro-Trump than I am. Even Kurt's quite a bit more pro-Trump than I am. But you know what, whether you're pro-Trump or against Trump, don't you think sharing this at the dinner table, do you think that would cause a lot of controversy, Kurt?
It just depends on who's around it, but it shouldn't. It's just like the Make America Great Again, Sam. Shouldn't cause controversy, but, you know, some folks just want to fight about it, you know.
Yes, I understand what you're saying, but I'm saying to you that I think, believe it or not, in most homes, even liberal homes, Kurt, believe it or not, without the mainstream press dividing people apart, and without in quiet moments where you're not there to, you know, I got to uphold my, you know, feminist position or my anti-Trump position. Or, in other words, if you take all the, I don't know what word to use, divisionists out of the mix, all the, I got to save face, whatever.
Okay, you take all that out, and in quiet moments, I think 90% of the nation would read that and say, you know what? That's good. And
well,
I'll bet you if you did
like
an experiment.
The old phrase.
Go ahead.
It's like the old phrase about there's no atheists in foxholes, but the bottom line is,
good
Sam,
point.
In this case, you're going to be representing and including God in the mix, and that's what really ticks them off. Typically, the atheists, et cetera, they just don't want you to bring it up.
And I think there's many of those people that in public discourse that feel that way, but I think in private they would acknowledge. And I'll bet you $1,000 if you were to do, you know, the Mark Dice videos where he goes out and asks people strange questions and they just show how ignorant they are and this kind of stuff. I guarantee you that if you rolled that out as, listen, here's what President Trump has to say, what do you think of it? He would get abused left and right. But I bet you $1,000 if you came back and said, hey, man, Bill Clinton wrote this for Thanksgiving, you know, and read it. And what do you think? People would be like, yeah, that was awesome. That was incredible.
That's
good
right.
for Bill. Good for President Clinton. I wish Donald was like that. They'd say that kind of stuff. And it would be that's something right. to behold. And I bring it up because I really believe, and this is something that we need to understand as we approach Thanksgiving dinner and spending time with loved ones, family, friends, etc. We really need to realize, I think most of the divisions in America, even if we disagree on a different political topics, I think most people would be polite and work together on a lot of things. So you got to set aside this mainstream press thing, and you got to realize that most people are good, and most people believe more similarly than we think they do. Even if they disagree on political topics at the core, they believe in God, family, and country. They believe in the preservation of life, liberty, and property. Most people really do, folks. I know you don't believe it from the press, but I'm telling you it's true.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen. By a friend of Medjugorje, whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, it ain't gonna happen. A book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled MEJ.com, or call Caritas in the U.S. 205-672-2000. 205-672-2000.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly. But I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
All right, it's fantastic news. I got an article that I want to tell you about. It's not really Thanksgiving, but it is a very, very, very cool story. It's written in modern times, and it's written by a very liberal news rag. It's USA Today, and Karina Bland wrote the article. And it's an article about a couple. I saw it in Arizona Republic, USA Today is where it is. And it talks about this guy, his head in his hands. guy's name is Frank Calzadilis, I think is how you say it. Anyway, it is a tremendous, tremendous article. And it's survivors of the shooting that took place in Vegas. And the husband, or the headline says, husband held on to belief. She's in there. Karina Bland writes the piece. And it talks about this guy that sat in the hospital room with his head in his hands, listening to the plunk, plunk of the blood from his wife's head dripping. And then it goes on this big, long article and talks about how his wife, who was shot in the head and went into a coma. And it talks about how they thought, you know, that they should just pull the plug and let her go. And he was forced with this decision, and all the family came in to say goodbye. And the mother of the daughter said to her son-in-law, Frank, you have to make this decision. She's your wife. It's your decision. And the reason that I bring this up is because oftentimes families fight over what ought to be done, and they forget about who's who. And when a wife or a husband, or I should say this, when a man or a woman leaves their parents and they get married, then their spouse is their one, their significant other, their go-to. I mean, it should be God and then spouse in terms of the order of things, right? Anyway, I bring this up because the mom understood that and said, you know, Frank, it's your wife. You decide. I know I'm a mother, but I got to leave this decision to you. You love her. You know what's best for her. And so Frank pondered on this, and he listened to all the experts, and he listened to family, and he thought, you know what? We really ought to pull the plug. She wouldn't want to live like this. It's the only kind thing to do. And then he went and prayed. I know you're not allowed to talk about that in a USA Today article, but, and he prayed, and he got on his knees, and he thought, and he prayed, and all of a sudden he got this overwhelming feeling that she would be all right. And his mind said, screamed, how could that be? But he said, I don't know. I just went with my feeling. And he called everybody and he said, look, we're not pulling the plug. We're not taking her out. She's in there. Thus, the headline, the husband held on to belief. She's in there. And it's this incredible, incredible story about this shooting that took place in Vegas. This lady was shot in the head. Her chances were zero. Anyway, it goes through the incredible story about how they prayed and they visited her and they sang to her and they read to her and they spent time with her and family rallied around. And no, there wasn't a time really when they left. They wouldn't leave her side. And anyway, then little things started to happen. You know, she would look at somebody, or she would blink, or she would squeeze a hand, or she would... And they knew she was in there, and they prayed, and they worked, and they held on to this belief, and the incredible medical personnel worked with them and supported them. And then eventually she laughed. They still have a long, hard road to recovery, Kurt, but the story is incredible. And I bring it up because I'm telling you, if you want some homework, if you want a great Thanksgiving homework assignment, it would be to go read this article from USA Today. Husband held on to belief. She's in there. Karina Bland, USA Today. I'm telling you right now, if you want to print that out and let people read that, dude, for Thanksgiving and say, you know what? We got a lot of problems in America. We got shootings and we got, you know, political rhetoric on all sides of the aisle. And we got enemies and we got haters and we've got threats of life and stability and safety and freedom and everything. We've just got so much. But when you read this story, it transcends all of that. And says, man, a husband's belief in a wife is really important. And he believed she was in there. And he went to God and got direction from God and the peaceful feeling. And then took action on that revelatory reality that God said to his mind and his heart, she'll be all right. And he trusted in that. And when you trust in God and then carry out actions and pray and protect and do the best you can for your family. And man, what a Thanksgiving bonanza, if you will. I mean, what an awesome thing. Anyway, I wanted to tell people about that, Kurt, just because I think, you know, even we get critical of USA Today and a lot of the mainstream press from time to time. But Kurt, when they printed this article, it's an experience to read. Now, I don't know who's the hero or the heroin or the whatever in this case. I don't know. But I'm telling you right now, the girl that went through it is a hero. The husband that made the right decisions is a hero. The medical staff, male and female, both. I don't know what they are. They're heroines, heroines, whatever. They're hero. They're just great people doing good things. And you know what? They're God's children caring for one another. And while these people are saving someone's life in a hospital and a husband has a belief in a wife and everybody together, including the President of the United States, is turning to God. And man, does it get better than that? So, Kurt, what did you find out on this heroism, hero, whatever thing? Any answers?
Yeah. Go. I do. You know, so what you've got when you put in the word hero automatically... heroine comes up, and that's hero spelled with an I-N-E on the end. And it says a woman admired or idealized for her courage, outstanding achievements, or noble qualities. For example, she was the heroine of a materialist generation. Then it says the chief female character in a book, play, or movie who is typically identified with good qualities and with whom the reader is expected to sympathize. You know, there you go. That's where I get that.
And hero? Thing.
Yeah, hero would be just...
No. What's the hero definition?
It's basically... sorry, it just went away from my screen. But it's basically just the word like that, but for...
Now, by the way, the drug heroin is admired, right?
Yes. This one says, under hero, it says the chief male character in a book, play, or movie who is typically identified with good qualities.
You got the hero and the what? Heroine?
Heroine, yeah.
But it's spelled different than heroin, right?
I guess so.
Or is it the same? How do you look up the drug heroin?
I think they're really close.
All right.
Sam. Maybe it just doesn't have, it doesn't have an E on the end.
Okay. So you just take off the E and you get the drug. Put it on, you get a great person.
Yeah.
All right. Grateful for private property. John Stossel writes an incredible piece that I think is Thanksgiving-esque, to say the least, Kurt.
Yeah, it's a good point, Sam. And, you know, I don't always, I'm not saying everything I see from John Stossel is, you know, my favorite, but this was good.
It's not only good, it's great. When he does right, we're going to give him credit, Kurt.
Yeah. He says, when we celebrate Thanksgiving this week, I will give thanks for property rights. Property rights allow each individual or family to do what we want with our small piece of the world without having to answer to the whole community. On Thanksgiving, we'll probably be told to think of America as one big family, and for some people, government is the head of that family. That idea warms the hearts of America's new democratic socialists, but thinking like that nearly destroyed this nation before it began. The pilgrims at Plymouth didn't share a feast with Indians after arriving in 1620 because America was so filled with bounty. Instead, the pilgrims nearly starved to death. They tried to farm collectively, the entire community owning all the land and sharing everything like socialists. Governor William Bradford wrote, "By the spring, our food stores were used up and people grew weak and thin. Some swelled with hunger. Then," writes Bradford, "after much debate, I assigned each family a parcel of land. This had very good success because it made every hand industrious. Crop production increased because workers reaped direct benefits of their own effort. They stopped hoping someone else would do the hard work. It's not that the pilgrims were lazy or weak. They'd risk their lives to cross an ocean to try to build a community from scratch. But in tiny, often imperceptible ways, we each do a less efficient job and pay less attention to the task at hand if we think the whole community is responsible for that task."
We're live for Thanksgiving. Quick pause in seconds.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped-up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
Anyone who challenges their control is deemed a sexist, a racist, a xenophobe, and morally deformed. They will attack you. They will slander you. They will seek to destroy your career and your family. They will seek to destroy everything about you, including your reputation. They will lie. Lie, and then again, they will do worse than that. They will do whatever's necessary. The Clintons are criminals. Remember that. They're criminals.
I'm going to open up our libel laws so when they write purposely negative and horrible and false articles, we can sue them and win lots of money. We're going to open up those libel laws.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the political cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
I want to dedicate this song to Mr. Rupert Murdoch.
All right, we're talking about an incredible column written by John Stossel. And grateful for private property, John Stossel. Great article. Go ahead, Kurt.
Yeah, so he was, you know, he goes on here. He says, crop production increased because workers reaped direct benefits of their own effort. They stopped hoping someone else would do the hard work. It's not that the pilgrims were weak or lazy. And then he tells about how they risked their lives coming across. And then he says the pilgrims were the same people after their switch from collective to individual farming, from socialism to capitalism, as it were. But after the switch, they thrived. That led to the first Thanksgiving. The bounty for which we give thanks this week was made possible by that early course correction to private property. I worry that 400 years later, we've turned into ingrates. Instead of celebrating individual producers, Americans give thanks to a gigantic government for handouts. It's not just the poor who get a helping hand. Middle and even upper class Americans have been taught to expect government to guarantee health insurance programs, dispense our retirement income, run our schools, and provide security. We do things as a single, unanimous unit that could be done better by private individuals and the voluntary groups we form. Why? I think the idea of everyone pulling together under the warm umbrella of wise political leaders, as if all 330 million Americans sat around the same dinner table, makes people feel cozy and safe. But, John Stossel continues, it's a dangerous illusion. It's hard enough to get a real family to agree on things for the holidays. Children fight, tastes differ, not everyone wants to hear the same music. On a small scale like that, we know each other well enough to forgive slights, such as an uncle knocking over the gravy boat or the kids playing loud music. But trying to do that with 330 million strangers is a formula for disaster. The result of pretending.
I'm going to stop you there for a second, though, and say it's only a disaster if we don't turn to God. You know, 300 plus million Christ-like people could live together in harmony, Kurt. And I bring that up not to say that we're there yet, not to say that I'm even there yet, but to say that that is possible. Never lose sight of the possible, never lose sight of the hope, and never lose sight, in my opinion, of the goal. For us to become Christ-like in our behaviors and our attitudes and our beliefs and our thoughts and our actions in such a way to be self-governed. And that was kind of the genius of America, that God's laws would hold us in check, not by force, but by agency. I choose to follow Christ. I choose to try to do better at implementing his attributes into my life. I choose to have his, meaning the Savior Jesus Christ, image in my countenance. And I think that we can't speak about this without acknowledging that that is the key. And in my humble opinion, that is the effort and the goal that we all should have. And if we do, I know it won't be perfect, but we can get a whole lot closer than anybody else in the world. And if we teach everybody in the world to do that, we can take, what, 7 trillion or billion people? 7 billion people, and we can get closer to that, Kurt. And I know it's a long way off, and I know we'll never achieve it in this life. I'm not suggesting we're like Jesus Christ. I mean, he was perfect, and he lived a sinless life, and he, you know, was his father's physical son, right? And so, I mean, I get that there's a difference, but I also get what he's asked us to do. Come, follow me. He's asked us to keep his commandments. He's asked us to try to become like him. And so that's our quest. And I submit to you that if we're all truly on that quest, you know, it won't be perfect, but it is not disaster. Rather, it is the admonition from the only one to rise from the dead and then give us an opportunity for life as well. Anyway, I bring that up because on Thanksgiving, it's important to point that out. And I hope people think about that as they gather around the dinner table and spend time together as families. Kurt?
Very good, Sam. And he, you know, he finishes up. He says the result of pretending we're one big household that can manage everything collectively is more than 20 trillion of debt and a million complicated laws. I'd probably say a trillion. But anyway, then we fight about who should be in charge of it all. Collective farming nearly starved the pilgrims. It also starved tens of millions in the Soviet Union and in communist China. And it's not just a farming problem. Doing anything collectively, especially if you do it involuntarily, or we would say forced, is a bad, inefficient idea. Government can force everyone into the same centrally dictated plan, but in doing so, it stifles individual initiative and drive. Economists call it the tragedy of the commons, and it happens whether the individual's goal is to make food, build houses, or invent a better running shoe. John Stossel finishes up, last couple of sentences. He says, this holiday, I'll be thankful that the pilgrims were smart enough to stop doing things the hard way. Modern America should learn from that.
Again, I couldn't agree more, Kurt.
Yep, good stuff.
And I really like the line where he says, I worry that 400 years later, after that great lesson was taught to Governor Bradford and his, you know, pilgrim... I don't know what you want to call it. I guess he was the governor, so his pilgrim society there, that we've turned into ingrates. Instead of celebrating individual producers, America you know, really is known for its handouts. We give thanks to a gigantic government for handouts. See, I think we need to stop that. And I think that's the poignant point that he makes. All right. There's another story that's not so delightful, Kurt, but I think it's worth highlighting on Thanksgiving because I think it's at the heart of Thanksgiving. You know, Christ teaches us to feed the hungry and clothe the naked. And, you know, we want to do unto others as we want done unto us. And we need to, you know, if you've done it in the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto me, kind of an idea. Well, remember how we talked about in Kansas City how the government dumped bleach on a bunch of food so that they couldn't give it to the homeless. You remember that, right? And then you heard that, hey, they decided they aren't going to dump bleach on food anymore, which is good. But the battle continues, Kurt. And I want to highlight the article here. The headline says, where feeding the needy requires both a heart and a permit, is the headline. And it talks about they unfurled colorful blankets on the grassy slope, and they unloaded trays of corn dogs, baked beans, and vegetable beef soup. Every week for the past 3 years, the volunteers have gone to a park just outside downtown Kansas City with home-cooked meals for the homeless. They call it, Kurt, a picnic with friends. But on a cloudy afternoon earlier this month, an inspector from the Kansas City Health Department showed up and called it something else. An illegal food establishment. She ordered most of the food put into black garbage bags, bundled them on the grass, and then in a move that stunned the crowd, she poured bleach all over it. Alan Andrews, who's been living on the streets for the past year, said he watched silently as the bleach was dumped all over the food, thinking back to when he had a home. He remembered how he sometimes had poured bleach on trash he put out for collection to make sure the rodents wouldn't get into it. Mr. Andrews, 46 years old, said they treat us like animals. As the nation prepares for one of its biggest holidays and one of the biggest holiday feasts and a season of Thanksgiving, a bitter fight has emerged in Kansas City over who is permitted to feed the hungry and just how are they allowed to do it. On one side are city officials who say they're merely concerned about the safety of donated food. On the other side are the volunteers who consider the city's food sharing regulations nothing more than heartless technicalities, whose real purpose is to discourage homeless people from congregating. Similar battles have erupted in places like Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Tampa, in El Cajon, California, where volunteers have literally been arrested after feeding the homeless. Kansas City officials say their crackdown is about actually protecting the needy. They said city ordinances require groups like Free Hot Soup, that's the one that organizes gatherings every Sunday at four different parks. Well, they need a food establishment permit. We'll talk about it on Thanksgiving.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, tilt things in their direction.
There's no voter fraud.
you start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. And you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text F-I-G-H-T to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. Defendapatriot.com.
We're feeding the needy requires both a heart and a government permit. We're talking about Kansas City, the big old fight there. The government says, hey, man, these groups need a food establishment permit. These people go to four parks. And they hang out and they give homeless food. But the bottom line is the government says you can't do it. You got to have a food established food government permit. And that the city could not assure the sanitary conditions of the home kitchens where these people prepare the food before they take it to the park and give it to the homeless. Homeless folks are more at risk of foodborne illness because of the challenges they're living under, said Rick Starcher. He's a director of the health department over there in Kansas City. Feeding them an unsafe meal, they'll actually be lucky if they can get an ambulance and get to the hospital. But free hot soup volunteers and their supporters say the city's, quote, cleanliness concerns are nothing more than a cover. In reality, they said, the city just wants to break up large gatherings of homeless people. And why? Because they're bowing to the demands of some residents. The volunteers say their model to feeding the hungry is incompatible with, quote, permit requirements, in large part because the approximately 100 volunteers now prepare meals in their homes would be required to cook in government-approved commercial kitchens instead. The group considers its gatherings more akin to church barbecues or family reunions than public events that require governmental permitting. This is about anti-homeless people, anti-poor people policy, a city councilman who's running for mayor of Kansas City said. Mr. Andrews said that he lost his job and has been unable to find anything job-related more steady than cleaning the bathrooms at the Kansas City Royal Stadium during baseball season. He said the free hot soup meals are perfectly safe. He says that I've been eating them for a whole year and I haven't been sick yet. They cook with love, the homeless man says. No documented cases. This is critical to understand. No documented cases of people getting sick from free hot soups food has been reported, Kurt. None. But the risks of foodborne illness from charitable meals are real, food safety experts say. Anyway, they talked about a church gathering in Concord, South Carolina, where they had some food contaminated with some bacteria. They talked about in several cities in California, hepatitis breakouts have occurred of foodborne illness. And they say 50 homeless people were hospitalized, and I guess they had turkey served at a rescue mission in Denver and got sick. They say just getting access to food is one thing, but we want to make sure it's safe, said Mitzi Diebaum, managing director at Food Safety in Feeding America. They got a relief organization with food banks across the country. In Kansas City, though, neither side seems to be backing down. City officials say they would continue to shut down free hot soup gatherings, though they said they would not be bleaching the food anymore, an act that drew headlines and drew outrage. The group's gathering resumed on Sunday in defiance, but city inspectors stayed away, saying they wanted to give the group a chance to comply with the health requirements.
But at a downtown park, volunteers at, quote, Free Hot Soup did things differently this time. At the urging of a Facebook post, they ordered food from restaurants to be delivered to the park, a tactic that complied with the city's rules. But volunteers at Prospect Plaza Park, where the bleach had been dumped, were defiant. They showed up with home-cooked casseroles and fajitas. And there's a poster that was seen that said access to food is a human right. Legal observers from the American Civil Liberties Union were on hand, as were new volunteers inspired by news of the bleaching. Michael Garrison drove 2 hours. He's a chef at a university sorority house, and he brought a pot of gumbo and his food handler's license, just in case anybody wanted to question him. He'd bust out the permit there. Anyway, last year, a survey by the Department of Housing and Urban Development said that about 1,700 homeless people live in that area. Anyway, the article goes on and on. Kansas City currently has 43 permits to feed the homeless, and I think this is where it really is. Here's what happens, ladies and gentlemen. When you get permitted people, then they get mad about the people that don't have permits. So Kansas City has 43 organizations with permits to feed the homeless, and many of these organizations get governmental funding or private grant funding, and I think it's their complaints. This one lady says, I have a right to hang out in a park and share food if I want to. Judy Smith, a homeless woman with mental stability issues, said that even after the bleaching, she went and rummaged through the trash and found some sandwiches that were wrapped in plastic bags that didn't have bleach on them. She ate them. She said, why waste food that's still good? Anyway, the battle goes on, Kurt. This isn't just a Kansas City battle, but I think the battle is between neighborhoods that don't want the homeless or the prisoners or released, you know, felons or you know, or it's these 43 organizations that want quite, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, special privilege or government permit or a handout, a special privilege to do this. In other words, you got to be licensed by your government to do this. But nevertheless, we got a battle heating up over this very issue. And I think at Thanksgiving, we got to come to a better solution than this, Kurt. Can people hang out at a park as friends and consider it more like a church barbecue or a family reunion? Or, hey, we're just feeding our friends that are the homeless. And are people allowed to do that? Or is the government going to shut that down? And I really believe that the government is on a collision course with charitable efforts. And I really believe that these organizations that have government permits and approval are kind of at odds with those who don't. And, you know, where feeding the needy has, you know, you need a heart and a permit just to be able to deal with this. I think it's a tragic, tragic situation. And I really think we need, as Americans for Thanksgiving, need to think about this seriously and say, what is the best way forward for America? And I believe the plan of yesteryear where churches and charitable organizations took care of this and the government got out of it, I believe that's the best solution going, Kurt. What a tragic situation. But, you know, the bleach story was a flash in the pan news headline. Most people don't know this is an ongoing saga in Kansas City. And really battles being fought all across the country about these very issues. You know, what do? Do you feed the homeless and encourage them to hang out in your neighborhood? Do you give to panhandlers so they appear outside of every grocery store and outside of every gas station begging for money? Outside of every, quote, metro station or government transportation? You know, and let them beg for money and encourage that. See, I think that's not the answer. And I don't have a problem with people feeding homeless. I think they're free to do so. But I personally believe there's a lot of nonprofit philanthropic organizations that do a great, great job, and you can trust them. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is one of them, and they partner with many others. And I think there's a better way to go about this than fighting. There's a better way to go about this than having the government in charge. A much better way. All right, Kurt sent me so many stories, I don't even know where to start now. How about Thanksgiving at the White House? Is that different than we talked about, Kurt?
No, it's just highlighting it, and you know, I mean, like you said, this story you were just talking about is so important because, hey, here's good people trying to do some good, and yet bureaucrats in government, you know, who many times I believe they think they're, you know, trying to do something to protect people or whatever else, but they're just, well, they're just lost in their efforts there, Sam. And you know, I when it comes to the president and that kind of thing, this one just goes into a little more detail, but you know, I don't see that there's much more there to add. It's
but
just
here's
the
what
president...
there is to add, that you know what, other people are reporting on the good, and my point as well.
That's right.
I think that's noteworthy to bring up for sure, that hey, there's others that are writing about it. And right now, they're not just critical. They're actually, what, contributing to working together?
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
Nice to see. You know,
I think so.
A few more.
So that's the takeaway. And they've got a lot of details and stuff like that. And there you go. Now, I guess there's a Butterball shocks parents story too, Kurt, to end on kind of thing.
Well, Sam, you know, apparently in this new world we live in, you can literally do a turkey in a microwave, and I just didn't know that. But they don't recommend you use the big 25-pounders. You use the smaller turkeys, you know, like the 12-pound thing or whatever, and they give you some instructions. I recommend against it. I mean, if you don't have time to just put that thing in and let it cook properly, you need to lighten up your schedule. You know what I mean? At least in my opinion, but it is a way to say that, hey, if you're really time crunched and you didn't get the whole turkey thing done early in time, you can use the nuclear.
But slow down. What's this viral? What's this challenge? Butterball turkey challenge?
Yeah, that's basically what they're saying, Sam. And they say that, look, they've been doing this whole turkey thing way back before there was even hashtags. You know, you can participate if you want.
In what? Cooking your turkey in a microwave?
Yeah. Yeah, it can be done that way, you know. And they say they were participating in what's called a viral prank, yeah, which prompts kids to ask their parents whether it's possible to successfully microwave a 25-pound turkey. The clueless kids asked how long it would take to cook a turkey in the microwave, noting they didn't want to wait hours for it to roast in the oven. The question drew a variety of responses from confused and concerned elders, the majority agreeing that a turkey doesn't belong in a microwave at all. Pranksters mocked the responses.
So would I.
Yeah, they received posting screenshots of their conversations. Some mothers called it a joke and said the question doesn't even make sense, while fathers instructed their children not to be dumb and warned it would turn out badly. Anyway, I guess they were just having a little fun, you know. Saying,
it all depends, Kurt, on how you deem go badly.
Yeah, good point.
So, you know, it probably won't blow up your kitchen.
Yeah.
But it'll probably ruin the nutrition of your turkey. Right?
Good point. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Just weird stuff, you know, but I think this don't the Butterball people, don't they get a lot of advertising from these challenges and stuff, isn't
That's
it?
That's a
kind
good
of
point, Sam. It's a smooth way to, you know, encourage their product. So they're doing some smart moves there.
I'll tell you that right now. But I would submit to you, you know, now some people do the fried turkeys, Kurt. You ever done a big old turkey fry, buddy?
I haven't done it, but I'm looking forward to the first time I get to participate in that.
Amen.
I mean, just talk about fried almost anything, and you enhance the flavor, don't you?
You got to get someone to come up from the South, Kurt, to Utah, and help us fry one of them turkeys. Learn how to do it.
That's right. Good boy.
All right. Thanks for being alongside for the ride. 2 hours in the can. Happy Thanksgiving, ladies and gentlemen. Please make it a day of gratitude and appreciation for those around you, will you? And for God Almighty. And for the free country that we live in, and for the bounty that we have, and then go out the rest of the year, all 365 days, and see how you can bear one another's burdens. Would you please? Would be grateful if you would. We declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.